Hi, Queens. I have Ella Matthews with me today. I'll read her bio for you, then I'll introduce her to the podcast. So, Ella Matthews has a unique style and skill set to help people out of physical, mental, and emotional pain. By combining cognitive hypnotherapy, pain neuroscience education, trauma release exercises, and oh, here we go. Here's a word, Butego.
Buteyko.
Butego. Thank you. Breathing tuition. She provides a top-down, bottom-up, comprehensive approach to healing, which has gained her an impeccable reputation as a competent, kind, and knowledgeable therapist. Ah, wonderful bio. So, Ella, welcome to the Body Love Binge podcast.
Thank you so much, Victoria. Thank you.
So, shall we dive in with 10 quick fire questions?
Let's go for it.
Okay, number one, have you got a favorite book?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I've got a favorite top 100 books.
Give us your top three.
My top three?
Yeah.
Well, anything by Gabor Mate, because he's just a legend. I'm currently reading some what other people would probably consider very dry, but I consider it absolutely fascinating, books about chronic pain. Explain Pain is a fantastic manual for people who want to learn more about chronic pain, and that's kind of like a Bible for me. And that's such a good question because it's really hard to narrow it down. I'm a total book fiend. Anything about trauma, is my jam. So I'm afraid I can't answer that in a short way.
Not a problem at all. Okay, number two, if you could have dinner with any historical figure, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's another good question, isn't it? Oh, I don't know how short these answers are going to be. Let me say, probably Bob Marley,
Oh,
because
yeah.
he was just a legend, and his view of the world was unique. And I think he's a true peacemaker and healer. And I'm actually really sad that he's dead, even though he died when I was a kid. Because if he was alive today, the world would be a much better place.
Yeah, I watched the Bob Marley movie literally on this last weekend, just gone.
Oh, okay.
It
Is
was
it
really,
worth a watch?
yeah, for
I'll check
sure.
that out.
Worth a watch. Okay, number three, what's the most interesting place you've ever traveled to?
Another great question. I've traveled a lot, so I'd say probably the most interesting place for me was Hong Kong, because I went there entirely by myself, and so I was just chucked in the deep end. And it was like stepping onto another planet. It was so, actually, Shanghai, similar, just completely different, so different, like almost nothing recognizable in terms of culture. So the Asian countries, sort of developed, but also slightly off the beaten track. Yeah,
Wow.
Shanghai's not a place you want to mess with at all. It's crazy.
How long's the flight? They're meant to be quick fire, but I ask questions, so they're not even interesting. But I'm curious, how long's the flight
The
from
flight
UK?
was pretty long. It was maybe like, I think there might have been a couple of hours stopover, but it was under 12 hours, but anything over 4 hours starts to feel pretty long. But it was worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Thank you for sharing. Right. Oh, this is an easy one. What's your favorite food?
Avocado.
Oh. Number five, if you could master one skill overnight, what would it be?
Absolutely trying to. I'm trying to learn Spanish at the moment, so speaking Spanish would be super helpful.
Awesome. Number six, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received and did you take it?
Let me answer that one. I'm not going to answer that entirely truthfully for reasons that I can't share with the readers, and I will tell you later and you'll understand why, because it was more a joke than a piece of advice. But
Okay.
I would say, don't take yourself too seriously. And no, I probably didn't take it. I think I'm working on that one still.
Love that advice. And I agree with that one too. Okay, number seven, what's the last song you listened to on repeat?
Oh, at the moment, my jam is a song called Drover by Bill Callahan. And I'm listening to that a couple of times a day at the moment.
Oh, not heard that one.
It's not my usual thing, but it's almost like country music. My husband's stealthily getting me into country music. That's something that I'm learning to like it.
I love country music
Do
and
you?
music
I
and
never
all
used
sorts of
to.
crazy, nice, easy to listen to music. Okay. What's your favorite way to unwind after a long day?
Definitely a hot bath and probably some relaxing music and speaking to my husband and some deep breathing. Like that's got to come into the picture somewhere because I've got to walk the walk, right? So, yeah, deep breaths in the bath is the one.
Love that. I have a question about breathing. I'll save it till you get into the breathing part of our convo.
Sure.
Number nine, night of dancing or night in with a book?
Oh, night in with a book every time. I've
Same.
done the dancing. It was great. I like daytime dancing. I was in bed by 8:30 last night. I'm not ashamed to share that
Ella, I am with you. At 9 o'clock, that's when I start getting ready for bed.
people.
Take my makeup
9 o'clock
off.
is bedtime.
1000%. My friend, well, one friend calls me granny, but I'm owning it and I'm happily getting up
That.
early, fully refreshed all day.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah. Okay. Number 10, last one for the quick fire ones. What do you want people to take away from this podcast?
I would like people to take away a sense of hope that even if they're suffering right now, things can change.
I love that. So, let's dive in with this is a question I asked you to ask. Okay, that make does no sense. I asked you what questions you like to be asked, and you said this one, and I love this one. And I'm curious also, Ella, so why do you do what you do?
Well, often people retrain as therapists because of their own personal experiences, and I'm no different from that. So I've always had a deep desire to help people, and I was a massage therapist for years before I retrained doing what I'm doing now. And I also had a period of time where I was caring for my mum as she had cancer. She sadly did die 5 years ago. But I had a couple of incidences during that very difficult time in my life, which led me to become injured. And at the time, I just assumed that the physical injury was caused by physical damage. But it's a lot more complicated than that. And the understand since I have more understanding now, I now know that there was an absolute connection between what was going on emotionally for me at that time and the physical state of my body. But at the time, I didn't know that. And I suffered with pain for years afterwards, like really quite severe pain. And it was only after I expanded my understanding of that and went through some emotional processing that I got out of pain. So now I'm in a position to be able to share my experience, but also share the information and the tools and techniques and knowledge that I gained to help other people get out of pain.
Wow. You know, I'm so glad that you've shared it in the way you have, because I was the person who, like you, I guess, until you did all the training and everything, if you hurt yourself or if you had pain, it was linked to a physical experience or a physical ailment or nothing to do with anything to do with emotional and what's going on in your inner worlds. I have a different view on that now, the more I learn about trauma and all of that. So can you give me or our listeners and me, because I'm interested in the answer to this, some, like, let's say three examples of where a client might be experiencing pain, physical pain, and how that can be linked to what's going on emotionally for them.
Sure. So there's actually a very weak correlation between pain and tissue damage.
Wow.
Pain is simply your body's perception of how much danger you're in. And
Right.
so any danger can be interpreted as pain. And that our bodies can't distinguish between an imaginary threat or a real threat because our subconscious, that's why we could wake up in the middle of the night having had a terrible dream and we'd be shaky and sweaty. There wasn't anything attacking us. We were asleep, but our imagination is that powerful that your subconscious brain and your nervous system will interpret danger from whether or not it's something you've watched on the news, or whether you feel physically threatened, or whether you're having critical self-judgmental thoughts. So an example I can give is someone who recently came to me who had a low self-esteem. She didn't connect, she hadn't connected that to her hip pain. Mm. And I helped her join the dots. And within three sessions, she was pain free because she hadn't realized she had had a hip injury, but she thought that this was a persistent problem from the injury, when in fact, all injuries heal. You can break a bone and have no physical damage within 6 weeks to 2 months, right? So if physical pain is persisting longer than 3 months, at that point, it's technically chronic. And most chronic pain is due to oversensitization of your brain to the pain. Another example would be, I saw someone today actually, and she has eye pain, and she has it as a cyclical nature, and she's sort of connecting the dots to that and hormones, and we haven't got to the bottom of it yet, but she is quite harsh on herself. And often when you change the inner voice, when you change the way you talk to yourself regarding your symptoms, you're changing the lens through which you see those symptoms. And that gives you the chance to change your perception.
Mm-hmm.
Another example would be fibromyalgia, for example. I have people who come to me with fibromyalgia, which is often caused by a phenomenon called central sensitization, which is when your nervous system kind of gets stuck on and everything, it gets too sensitized and everything is perceived as threatening. And once you give your nervous system a chance to recalibrate, you can turn all of those stressors down, and then stuff that previously felt threatening doesn't necessarily need to be. And at that point, your body doesn't need to produce symptoms anymore. Now, I'm not saying I can fix fibro, because that's not true and it's not as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
But once you tune into your body's signals and listen to them on a deep physical level, your body then doesn't need to start screaming at you, because you've listened to those whispers and you've had that open communication. So ignoring your body's symptoms, becoming cut off from the neck down, it's not very healthy. You might be able to numb stuff out in the short term, but actually having that healthy communication between your mind and your body is absolutely vital for having a healthy perception of your levels of danger versus safety, which is basically everything comes down to danger versus safety for your nervous system.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing those, Ella. And it's reminded me of something that I would like to share for you and the listeners more so. I used to have a chronic pain in my right hip. It was more like my hip flexor type area. I didn't understand until I went through what she calls an immersion, which is a deep therapy session all around your inner child and past childhood experiences with the support of some plant medicine, just a very low dose, that hip pain was directly connected with the codependency and enmeshment that I had with my mother. Interestingly enough, she also had a hip replacement on the right hip.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's gone now. So that experience I was lying down with my eyes closed, she was guiding me through an experience that was bringing my mum into the picture.
Yeah.
It was hurting so much, like it was like on fire. Mm. And then after that experience, it's completely gone.
That's so interesting, isn't it? And it actually doesn't surprise me, because that's exactly what I'm talking about, because there's such a close connection between your internal emotional landscape and your physical perception of pain. And especially if you've had ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, that clouds the lens through which you perceive the world. And, you know, often a question that I will ask people is, what happened in your life between 5 years to up to 6 months prior to this onset of pain? And there will always be, that I'd say 90%, 99% of the time, there'll be a connection between whatever stressful thing happened in their life and the onset of pain. And when you take away the need for stress from that experience, whether it's through therapy or through body-based somatic exercises or through journaling or whatever, whichever way you want to address it, then often the need for the body to continue to create symptoms just falls away.
Wow, it's
so
amazing,
there's definitely
isn't
a connection
it?
There for between what happened with you and your mum, and especially the fact it was on the same hip. That's not a coincidence.
No. And so question, I guess I'm always fully honest, this is something I experience, not all the time, from time to time, but it's been chronic since I stopped working with horses, actually, which would have been when I was about 30. Lower back pain, which I'm pretty sure is very common, like to the point where if I'm sitting for more than an hour, I'm kind of like having to keep adjusting and cross my legs and change.
Yeah.
So without you obviously coaching me or using up a lot of your time for that, I'm sure a lot of people can resonate. Without knowing much about me, would that be resonating with some kind of emotional trauma or experience, in your opinion?
So low back pain, super common. Most of the time it doesn't have a hugely structural element. There might be an influence in that, in terms of if you have to sit for long times, obviously your body likes movement. It might be that your posture needs a bit of correcting. It might be that you need to do some specific stretches, but that's alongside the understanding that your brain can get turned up and stuck on a hypersensitive mode, and that then creates the symptoms, creates the environment for chronic pain to flourish. So yes, the stretching helps, the movement helps, but also asking yourself the question, for example, is it just that chair that you sit in, or is it all chairs?
Or any
sitting. It's all the chairs, any sitting. Okay. And does it ever take a day off? Is there ever an environment where you sit down in a chair and you don't experience pain, or is it all the time?
All the time.
And is it after a certain period of time, or is it sort of straight away?
It's after usually about an hour.
About an hour, sorry, you said. And is it on one side or both, or does it switch?
Both.
Both. Yeah, so it's a lot to go into here, but what I would usually do with a client is help to pinpoint any triggers and help to understand what stresses are going on in your life. And then help you to understand any positive aspects of your life, because really it's about the balance of the two, right? So you can look into lower back pain isn't just something that happens to your lower back and there's nothing else going on. There's so many different factors going on, and being able to pinpoint factors that are making it worse with the intention to unwind them, whether or not that's a critical inner voice or a never-ending to-do list or perfectionism or people-pleasing or high conscientiousness or not being believed by medical professionals. That's a big one. If you go to the doctor and they say, no, don't be silly, you're making up, huge. Being medically gaslit is really bad for pain. And then focusing on the things that do bring you joy and make you happy. You know, what exercise haven't you been doing recently? What is there any friends you need to connect with? And looking at the stepping back and looking at the bigger picture is way more effective than, oh, have some painkillers and, you know, get a massage. Because that stuff is great in the short term. But when you take away the root cause, the need for that pain perception, then the pain just falls away. So without sort of spending all of our time focusing on this one thing, but it's important to recognize that this is something that millions of people suffer with and they don't have a resolution. And that's because the medical professionals are failing them, not because they're doing anything wrong. But expanding your understanding of pain is one way out of pain, because that knowledge is really empowering.
Wow. So you mentioned when you were speaking before, I think you said the word body somatic release or something around that. Can you share briefly the different modalities that you work with clients, and then a little bit about what each one might look like?
Yes, absolutely. So on a physical level, I work with trauma release exercises, which is quite an innovative way of literally shaking off tension, stress, trauma. It's very bottom up. So it's seven quite simple exercises, which when done in an environment of safety, allow your body to do what it wants to do. And what your body wants to do is to shake. So you do the exercises, you lie down. It's very important you feel safe, because that's the only context in which this is helpful, because the safety then provides a corrective experience.
Yeah.
And you allow yourself to shake. And by doing that, if there's any So we have often we have what's called parasitic tension, which is muscular tension we don't even know we're carrying around. And this might be, may or may not be the case for you in your lower back. We don't notice we're carrying it, but what happens when you squeeze a muscle tight for a long time? It gets tired. So when you release parasitic tension on a physical level, it frees up energy in the body. You're also helping to reset your nervous system back to a state of balance and calm. So your nervous system is a bit like a seesaw, right? You've got your rest, digest, growth, and repair arm on one side, and you've got your fight, flight, fawn, or freeze on the other. And you're supposed to have a healthy flexibility, but we can kind of get stuck in that stress response. So TRE helps to rebalance that seesaw. And the aim isn't to be calm and relaxed all the time, because that would be inappropriate. Sometimes we need that mobilizing energy to get stuff done. The aim is to have balance. So being able to bring yourself back to a state of balance so that you can respond appropriately depending on your circumstances, super important, super healthy for your body to be able to have that ability to flex from one side to the other. So that's TRE. I tend to do that separately because it requires a different approach to the hypnotherapy. But the hypnotherapy, the type that I'm trained in, is cognitive hypnotherapy, which comes with the understanding that we're all unique and everyone needs a different approach, and that we all go in and out of trance states every day. So trance isn't like a magical special state. It's not something I do to you. It's a natural state. It can happen when you're driving. You know, you get from A to B and you can't remember the journey because you are so engrossed in thinking of something else. That's your driving trance. People who are addicted to smoking, that particular emotion, that's their smoking trance. You do it without thinking, right? So it's your subconscious running the show. Being able to influence that with positive suggestion, it's a bit more of a top-down approach. You know, it's using the brain to influence the body. But I also come with the understanding that our brains aren't just separate things that our bodies are there to carry around. Our brains are always embedded within our bodies, and our bodies are always embedded within our environment, within our community. So that's called embodied cognition. It's the understanding that our brains are a feature of society rather than just sort of separate little boxes that we carry around in our heads. And so the cognitive part of cognitive hypnotherapy comes with the understanding for me that your brain is part of your body and your body is also part of your brain, because your brain extends down into your spinal cord. The two are connected. You can't take them apart. And your spinal cord goes all the way down your spine, obviously. So looking at the bigger picture is kind of what I've trained myself to do, and pulling these different approaches together is really, really helpful for clients, because if one thing doesn't work, that's fine. We've got something else, right? On top of that, I practice Buteyko breathing, which basically it was designed to help normalize dysfunctional breathing for people with breathing issues such as asthma, other types of COPD. And what it does is it normalizes your blood gas balance, it decreases symptoms of breathlessness, and it helps you understand your own breathing mechanics, because a lot of us don't breathe correctly. And again, that will drive the fight flight response, it will increase our anxiety. And it's often the missing link is when you understand your breathing, everything else can fall into place, because that's one of the pillars of health, right? Like you can't go without it. So having some influence over that, because your breath is the only part of your autonomic nervous system under conscious control. And when you influence that, everything else can fall into place, basically.
Okay, those all sound incredible. So now we've spoke about the breath, I have a question around that. And actually, this particular client who's listening will be very grateful I've asked this. And I've only ever met two people in my life so far that has experienced the same as what I have.
Right.
And I know intuitively it's linked to anxiety. I know intuitively it's linked to trauma stored in the body, which I also would love to ask you about. But it's this thing where when me or this client is anxious or feels under pressure, you can't take a full breath. So you kind of have to go, and it's like you still can't get a full breath. And then your body will yawn and on purpose. And then only when you yawn can you then like feel like you've got enough breath in. Does that
Yeah,
description make sense?
absolutely. Yeah, so yawning, that's one of the ways that our body will return to homeostasis, we come back to balance. Yawning is a signal that your rest digest arm of the sympathetic nervous system has kicked in. So your parasympathetic has kicked in. And that's probably your body coming back to a state of, okay, everything's okay now. Regarding feeling that you can't take a deep breath in, at that point, rather than taking a deep breath in, take a deep breath out. So what you're aiming to do is fully release all the air from your lungs. And then you don't need to do anything. You just relax because your body will breathe itself. So rather than forcefully trying to breathe in and feeling like you can't, when you take a really deep breath out and you release all the air from your lungs, and then you just let your body do what it wants to do, what it's going to do is breathe. And at that point, you'll feel that you can take a deep breath in.
I've just done that as you were sharing, and that is like magic. That's so cool.
Did you?
Yeah, I
Okay.
was like, okay, all the way out till there's nothing left. And then naturally, my body just was like easily breathing in. I mean, I didn't have the anxious thing now at this point, but I notice a difference like in a feeling within me. So thank you so much for sharing that.
And actually doing it before you have that anxious feeling is really good because you're training your body so that next time you do it, if you do feel anxious, you'll go, oh, I've done this before and it worked. So you've just given yourself a corrective experience.
That is so cool. Okay, so let's talk about trauma being stored in the body then, because one example I like that I experienced was I'd go for a massage. I would be fully relaxed after a 90-minute massage. I'd get in the car. I wasn't stressed or anything, but you think about your day. And then I would notice that my body was tensing up as if to get back the normal level of tension within my body. And when I noticed that, I was like, wow, that is so interesting. So is that linked to, I guess, your quote, normal of what tension you hold within you? Where do we get the tension from? And how can trauma, like a traumatic experience, whether it's chronic emotional trauma from childhood and acute traumatic experience, how does that get stored in the body's cells? Because it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, really good question. So we kind of get used to what we find normal. And if being super duper relaxed isn't normal for us, we will just go back to the normal resting state of tense, if that's what we're used to carrying around. And that's what I mean by parasitic tension. We'll hold on to this stuff without even noticing it. And actually, at that point, if you do something like get a massage or have a breathwork session or do some deep meditation, the release that comes from that can actually feel jarring because we're not used to it. We're so used to having this underlying hyper alert, like hypervigilant state. So yeah, your body will, the thing is, it's really important to remember that even though you come back to a state of what your body is used to, it doesn't mean that it's stuck like that because of the phenomenon of bioplasticity, which is your body's ability to change given different inputs. Same as neuroplasticity, your brain's ability to change. We have that in our body as well. I can't remember the second facet of your question, but the third one was how does trauma get stored in the body? So specifically, especially before we were able to talk, when we were pre-verbal, we didn't have the words to describe what was going on to us, right? Because we didn't have the capacity to talk yet. And if specifically if trauma happens to us before the ages of one up until about th of zero up until about three, we don't have the words to express that. So that gets stored as implicit memory. And implicit memory is memory stored on a bodily level. So even if you can't cognitively remember, if something not great happened to you before the age where you learned to talk, that gets stored on a tissue level in the body. And again, because the nervous system, everything is a balance between what is safe, what is dangerous. Stuff that happens to us that's dangerous is going to get lodged more securely than st everyday stuff that happens that's safe, because our bodies need to remember that so that that can avoid happening to us again. But that can then work against us because obviously it's really unpleasant to have trauma and to carry around this difficulty in the way that you relate to the world. You know, like I said, it's a lens that clouds the way you see the world. But the good news is, you know, because of bioplasticity, everybody has the ability to bring themselves back to a healthy state of balance, especially if you're surrounded by safe people. You know, so much of healing is done in connection and having people around you who understand and support you, even if they don't know the finer details, that's not necessarily problematic at all. Feeling supported is one of the biggest ways you can support your own healing. You know, healing doesn't occur in isolation. So having a trusted therapist or having good friends or being able to reach out to people when you need it, as well as having the tools for yourself, super important. But yeah, it's trauma doesn't necessarily go away just with talking, because often the talking about it, unless it's done with the resolution to release whatever is being held onto, it can actually be re-traumatizing, which is why things like CBT have their limitations.
So what would you do with a client who has talked about it and has perhaps released some shame around that because you met them with love and understanding and held that safe space? Would it be kind of somatic release through physical movement? Would it be hypnotherapy? I guess everyone's different. Would it be a correlation of the two?
Yeah, everyone's different, and often it is a correlation of the two. And often when we have these things we're holding on to, it does inhibit our breath. So being able to breathe properly is a that would be one of the first things that I would assess. But TRE is so fantastic. Not many people have heard of it.
What does
It's
it stand
it
for?
stands for trauma and tension release exercises. And it's a way of releasing trauma without having to relive it. So you don't even need to think about whatever it was that traumatized you. That doesn't need to come into the picture. You can release it on a physical level. And then having that felt experience of safety is a corrective experience. So the more time you can spend in the relaxation period afterwards, the more you're sending a signal to your body of it's okay to relax and be safe. And that's where the facilitation comes in. It's taught as a self-help tool. So within once you've had done it a couple of times with someone who's trained and you feel safe to do so, you can then do it as a at-home practice. But doing it in a supportive environment with someone who is trained to support you is a really fantastic way of starting that process of releasing anything that's stuck.
Wow. So does it involve EFT tapping? Does it involve like rocking, or does it depend on who you have in front of you and what they need?
So the process is actually quite a set one for the getting to the point to do the exercises come first and they're in a set order. But then after that, whoever is doing it, whether it's you or someone else, lies down and just relaxes. And it involves neurogenic tremors. So they often start off in the hips. They're distinguished from pathological tremors, for example, Parkinson's, dystonia. That's created in a completely different part of the brain. And people conflate tremors with being something pathological because of Parkinson's, which is understandable, but it's a different part of the brain that's responsible for the neurogenic tremors. That means arising from the nervous system, and they start from the brain stem. And they usually start off in your hips, because the thing is, you have a very big hip flexor called your psoas. And that is literally your fight or flight muscle, because it kicks and it runs. That's what it does. But nowadays, we're not, running away from someone with spears. It might be our boss that's shouted at us, and it's not really appropriate to punch him in the head and run away in the to the corner and shake. So we just store all of this stuff upright, and then we go home and wonder why we can't relax at the end of the day. So it's a way of completing that stress cycle, letting go of anything that's stuck in your tissues. And often the shaking will then move or migrate from the hips to the legs or sometimes further up the body. So it's a way of really just restoring your body's natural intelligence and bringing your nervous system back to a state of balance without the need for words.
Wow, this is so incredible, Ella. And so what you've shared has reminded me of, I think it was from The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, or Tolle, whether you say his surname. And I think in the book he mentions if you look at ducks on the pond, or I've noticed this in my dog. So I'll give my dog's analogy because it makes more sense to me. So when my dog is not castrated, so he's a man with balls. So whenever he sees another male with balls in the distance or close up, there's a natural biological instinct, if it's a similar age, to just be aware to protect me, whatever it is. And then when that threat, if you like's gone, he'll do a big shake. He'll shake all that excess energy off and he'll get on with the walk.
And that is your dog doing TRE.
That's it,
Same
right?
thing. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, so that's what Eckhart Tolle said. When you notice ducks fighting on a pond or whatever, when they finish their fighting, they'll shake, and
And they
then he'll
won't ever
just.
need to think about that again. And they'll go off and they'll be friends.
Yes.
They've reset their stress cycle. And we don't do it as humans. We just don't. We've
Yes.
been kind of in, we've been kind of suppressed in our ability to be able to release that. And so TRE, it's a very regulated way of letting your body return back to that state of balance.
Yeah, that's awesome. So would dancing help? You know, when
Absolutely. Dancing is one of the best ways to do it.
shaking.
Yeah. And I personally think that intuitive shaking that comes with that dancing, if you look at like tribal cultures, they'll do stamping of their heels, they'll do bouncing on the heels, they'll jump. All of that is a way to complete your stress cycle. Other ways, they always involve movement. So running, yoga, not necessarily, although obviously yoga has loads of benefits, but like bouncing, stamping, shaking, running, punching things, kicking things, humming, singing, all of these ways to are active ways to complete your stress cycle. And without that, it just builds up inside us, and then we have insomnia, we get burnt out, we turn to unhealthy coping mechanisms, we end up shouting at the cat, it's really important to physically and proactively let go of your stress on the daily basis. So like 20 minutes a day really is what you need to be aiming at. Not necessarily TRE, that works best at like 2, maybe 3 times a week, maximum. You don't really need to do it any more than that. But yeah, completing your stress cycle is a really big one.
Wow. So would you say that those with eating disorders or exercise addiction, which I used to have, it is a biological response to restriction in terms of anorexia, but that aside, someone who is obsessed with exercise, needing to move all the time, which used to be me, would you say that is linked to all this anxiety and trauma stored in the body that like needs to get out somehow?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. And I've got close family members who've been addicted to exercise, been anorexic, and that constant being on the move, that's your fight or flight in motion. That is your body stuck in fight or flight.
Yes.
And being able to recognize that and take active steps to be able to release that instinctive pushing away or running away or fighting, and often that fight is with your own body. And then coming back to balance with healthy, restorative, active rest, super important. But recognizing it is the first thing.
Yeah. And would you say with the fear responses, the fight, flight, freeze or fawn? I mean, fawn is a newish one, isn't it? That's like more of a behavior, people pleasing type
Yeah, so
thing.
it's more recently recognized, but it's basically appeasing, it's keeping the peace so that you don't become there's no further harm turned towards you. And a lot of people don't realize they're doing it because there isn't as much understanding of it yet. But when you understand it, it gives you a lot of it can stop that negative chatter of, well, I should have done something more, I should have run away, I shouldn't have been so nice, because it's a protective response when the other ones have failed.
Yeah. So with freeze, I was wanting to ask you about. So, I guess people's have a different reaction depending on the situation. My go-to trauma response or fight or flight is to fight. However, I've been in situations sexually where I've just froze and not done anything. Am I right in assuming that if someone's in a freeze response, it can be more damaging or traumatic because it's almost like there's nothing you can't fight to try you there's a hope to get away if you're fighting. There's a hope to get away if you're running away. But when you're just freezing, it's almost like whatever's going to happen to me, it's going to happen. It's almost certain.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be more traumatizing because, well, for a few reasons. On a bodily level, you only really tend to freeze if fight, flight aren't available to you. If you're
Right.
stuck or if it's more dangerous to fight because your attacker's stronger than you, for example. So freeze is kind of the last chance. It's the last response. It's what animals playing dead do. When you see an animal and it's pretending to be dead, it's the same physiologically for humans, and it can look like not much is going on, but it's all the stress hormones going round and round and round without the ability to actually mobilize them. And also on a cognitive level, it can be more stressful because unless, again, there's that recognition of that's what's going on, you can think to yourself, well, why didn't I fight back? I should have run away. Why didn't I go and tell someone? Why did I continue to see this person? With and blame yourself. So there's an element of self-blame, which I've seen a lot with my clients. I could have done this, and why didn't I? Well, actually, no, you couldn't have done. That's your body's protection response protecting you. You don't get to argue with your nervous system responses. And once you can let yourself off the hook for what you perceive that you should have done and you didn't, it encourages healing, because it's not your fault. You know, if people go tend to that freeze or that appease, the fawn response, then all of those questions can come into your mind. Why didn't I say something? Why didn't I tell him to piss off? You know, why didn't I kick them? Because that would have put you in more harm.
Yeah. So I've always said, since I've been on this journey, along the way, I've picked up this quote, and it's probably not mine. Who knows? It could be. And that is, you can't mindset your way through a trauma response.
Mm-hmm.
So I see this in my clients, obviously, in eating disorder recovery, if they're paralyzed by making decision around what to eat, how can they then bring their intellectual prefrontal cortex back online, so they can then use the self-talk and use the well, what choice do I have? Am I right in sharing with them the first thing they need to do is as simple as take a breath, try to ground, try to feel safe and relax as much as possible physically, and then they can use their mindset and their intellect, because otherwise it goes offline in that fear response.
Absolutely.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And you know, you cannot access logical thinking if you are stuck in a fear state, because the brain kind of works in the same way that it evolved. So first of all, the brain stem evolved. That's the bit that's the same as reptiles, and that's responsible for our sense of, you know, for example, if we put our hand on a hot stove, we wouldn't be sitting there going, oh, that feels really hot, I think I'm going to take my finger off. Your finger comes off before you even think about it, right? And that's because your brainstem has kicked in to protect you.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that evolved first. On top of that evolved the limbic system, which is the emotional centers of the brain. And that's the bit that then goes, ow, that really hurt, oh no. And depending on what your inner voice is, either, why on earth did I do that, what an idiot, or, oh no, I need to be kind to myself, that was really sad, you know. And then only then, once the emotional center has kicked in, does the cortex, the neocortex, attach a story to that.
Right, so yes.
We need to use our brains in the same way that they evolved. So safety first, number one, safety first. Two, understand your fear response. And if you're in a fear response, understand that your prefrontal cortex, it's not going to be working. The blood has been diverted to the other bits of your brain. And only then you can bring that logical thinking in, because your brain's going to come back online once you're not in that fear stress response. So yeah, everything comes down to danger and safety with your nervous system. Have you heard of neuroception?
No, but I'm assuming it's a perception that you choose to look
for. Yeah, it was, I think the term was coined by Stephen Porges, who's like a instrumental trauma scientist. And it's like our sort of spidey sense. It's our sixth sense, and it's our nervous system's perception of whether or not we're in danger.
Yeah.
And once you understand that everything comes down to that, and that you're always scanning the horizon for danger, right? Whether you notice it or not, it's an unconscious response. Then everything kind of makes sense, because often we'll go through life and not notice the things that are making us feel unsafe, and then wondering why we can't switch off in the evenings, you know, because you've just had a, like, you've got into an argument on Facebook and all of your stress responses caused all these inflammatory and stress hormones to circulate around your body. It was just a silly argument on Facebook, but your body takes that in the same way than if you've just been hunted down by a saber-toothed tiger on the plains, you know, with your tribe, because danger is perceived the same way by your body.
Yes.
Regardless of what the danger is.
I've got two, because I could talk to you forever, Ella, honestly. So knowledgeable. It's fantastic. It's brilliant. I'm learning so much. So thank you.
Thank you.
one kind of practical question that is an example of what my client would face. And then also
Sure.
I want to just you go into self-talk and how that helps or hinders our life and journey in general. So going back to what I previously said about a client is in the supermarket, the fear response hits them. They know before the fear response happened, they know they want to and need to choose the fear food in order to recover
Right.
from eating disorder. Yet in that moment, it's almost paralyzing and they're unable to make a decision. So how would someone in that situation eventually, with the outcome of walking out of the shop with the fear food to eat, to then progress on their journey to food freedom?
Sorry, when you say fear food, can I just clarify what that means?
Say, for example, something high calorie, chocolate bar.
I see, okay.
Yeah,
so something that they've attached a sort of bad label to.
Yes,
Okay.
exactly.
And so how would they be able to make a decision in that moment?
Yes, to choose that fear food, because part of eating disorder recovery is doing the opposite of what the eating disorder is telling you to do.
I think have for all behaviors that where thought is inhibited, having an action plan that you've established beforehand. So have a list, have it on the list, you know, and you're just going around doing the list, and then you don't need to think about the list because the list is already there.
Yeah.
So having the chocolate bar or the cake or the fruit or whatever it is on the list, and then your brain can just autopilot down the list. And then you'll, when you get home at that point in the environment of your home, because you're safe and you're at home, you can, you're hopefully your logical thinking brain will catch up with your decision-making process, but make it easy as possible in terms of, for example, people who I see who are in pain, they need a self-soothing action plan. They need something that they can turn to when they're feeling rubbish and they haven't got the cognitive skills to deal with it. They can just take the list out of their handbag or look it up on their phone and say, right, this is what I need to do, and just work your way through that list.
Yeah, great. Or get it delivered online, so it's not even a choice, it just arrives. Yeah. Okay, great. And so lastly then, self-talk, how can that help and hinder our experience with pain? That's something that I did want to chat to you about.
Yeah. So it's a really, really big one. And there's a huge correlation between persistent pain and negative self-talk. Because you've got 3 trillion cells in your body and they're all listening to you all the time.
Yes.
And you can't heal a body that you hate. And
yeah.
so if you're berating yourself because you haven't got better fast enough, or if you have a thought process going along like something along the lines of, oh my God, why is this happening to me? It's never going to get any better. I just need to toughen up. I can't believe it's not over already. What if I turn out like my mum? You know, all of this catastrophization. And especially if it's, if you are being harsh on yourself, all of that is going to be the same as someone chasing you with a spear to your nervous system.
Yes.
It brings an element of danger. And the bigger thing is, the danger isn't something outside. You can't just leave the environment where the dangerous thing is, because the environment is in between your ears.
Yeah.
So being able to treat yourself kindly, super important if you're suffering. And a way that you can determine that is asking yourself one simple question. Would I speak to my best friend like that? Because if the answer is no, because you're not going to say to your friend, oh my God, just toughen up, sort it out. I can't believe you're just being so lazy. If they're suffering, right? You'd be a bit of a rubbish friend if you did.
Yeah.
If you're being too harsh on yourself, 100% that is going to be driving your suffering.
Yes, and perpetuating it as
Mm-hmm.
well. Have you heard of Dr. Emoto?
No, who's that?
So he's, excuse me, I think he's from China, and he is still alive and is still doing all these experiments. Do you have Gaia? It's like a spiritual Netflix.
Oh, is he the guy that does the sound experiments and talking to plants?
He's similar. He does water stuff. So
yes, he did the cymatics with the water.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so our bodies are what, 90% water, something
our
like
brains
that?
are 85 to 90% water, and the rest of our body is about 70%, so super high, yeah.
Right, so then when we talk to water, and this is everything, it's not just water, but they've done scientific studies on water, and we speak to a glass of water and we say, I hate you, you're not good enough, blah, blah, blah. They put the cells of the frozen water under a like a super magnifying glass, whatever they do in the
Yes.
scientific labs.
Yeah.
And the cells have distorted and they've gone all like ugly looking and disformed. And then you take a different glass of water from the same original sort of water source,
Yep.
different glass, and say, I love you, words of affirmation, thank you, I'm grateful for you. Freeze the water, put it under this microscope. Beautiful, symmetrical, gorgeous symmetry on the cells. When we speak to our bodies like shit, that same thing happens. So
100%.
our bodies respond to our words so innately and actual matter of factly that we didn't even realize.
Yeah, absolutely true. And that is one of the ways, one of the most powerful ways out of suffering, especially physical pain, is to change the way you talk to yourself. You know, cultivating that kind inner voice, being a supportive ally to yourself, catching yourself, you know, nipping it in the bud if you start to talk down to yourself. How would I speak to my best friend? And then talk to yourself like that. It's huge.
I ask myself, what would love say?
That's lovely. What a nice way of putting it.
Or what would love do right now? And then I
Yeah.
always come back
Yeah.
to who I naturally am, and then I do or say or think or feel that way.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Because the thing is, we forget that that's what we're made of. We're all made of love. We all come into the world just little amazing bundles of love. And then life gets in the way and we can forget that. But reconnecting to that is, that's the basis, I think, of everything, isn't it?
It is, Ella. And okay, so I would love for you to share, how are you working with people? What have you got on the cards coming up? How can people get in touch with you? Plug away as much as you like, because people need to work with you.
Thank you. So I do offer a 30-minute free phone conversation, and that's just really a chance to figure out if we would work well together. At the moment, I'm working one-to-one online and in person. I'm actually going to be wrapping up my in-person work and moving all of my work online within the next month or so. So please, if you know, that means that distance is absolutely no object and I can work with people, and I am working with people all over the world. I've got a client in New York at the moment. You know, some of the clients who I've had the best results with, I'll probably never even meet them in person. I'm also working on a group program, which will be how to release chronic pain. I've got four courses in the pipeline, but I'm anticipating that they're going to take me between 1 and 2 years to write and release. So in the interim, I'm just trying to spread the word and get my message reached a little bit further out to attract people to me who would benefit to the way I work, really. And you know, that's people in chronic pain, that's people who have trauma, that's people who have very high levels of anxiety. I also work with people with phobias, the more sort of traditional hypnotherapy style stuff. But chronic pain and trauma, it's a tough crowd, I'm not gonna lie, you know. But that's my thing, that's what I get the most joy from working with. So yeah, feel free to reach out. My email is ella@breathbodymind.co.uk. My website is breathbodymind.co.uk. And I've made it very easy. I've just, with the help of lovely Julie, helped to overhaul my website and the way people can contact me. So it's made it super easy to get in contact for a free chat, you know, no obligation. If you're feeling stressed in that particular moment, I'll give you a couple of tools straight away to get the ball rolling, because change can happen real quick, right? We just need to find the right inputs. My job is to give people those inputs.
That's amazing, Ella. And I'll link everything below so people can just click. So it's nice and easy
Thank
for them.
you. Please
Okay.
do. Thank
Well,
you.
thank you for your time and for your wisdom. And I've learned a lot.
I really appreciate the opportunity, and it's been really super nice talking to you.
You too. And I already have a few people I'm going to connect you with for you to be guests on their podcast in different areas of the world, because this work is so needed. So thank you again.
Sounds great. I really look forward to it.
All right, I'll see you
Thanks, Victoria.
next week.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye for now. Bye.